Welcome to May, Brendan.
Insert greeting to Alan here.
The Not a Thing podcast is kicking off May of 2016 with episode 185. It's actually not the, it's not May 1st, but it is the first recording we're doing in May. That's significant or something, maybe. Not really.
One day away from Cuatro de Mayo.
Yeah, I prefer to call that the fourth, or anything but to acknowledging the what is it, the
May the fourth.
I'm not a fan of the Star Warsization of May 4th. I like Star Wars. I really like Star Wars.
Wait, you have a problem with the commercialization of Star Wars?
Of May 4th, of saying that May 4th is Star Wars Day.
It's just another holiday invented by the big companies to make money.
It's, I also think it's a lazy pun, maybe. I don't know.
That is something to take issue with. Lazy puns are not they're totally a thing. I do them all the time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Feel terrible. Yeah. It's my own self-hatred.
Maybe I just hate it because I didn't come up with it. I'm not sure.
That feeling you get when you use a lazy pun and you feel real bad. There's gotta be some German word for that.
Right, right. That's absolutely a thing. I'll probably do something Star Warsy. I don't know. I don't think I've watched Force Awakens again since I saw it in theaters like four times. So it,
maybe oh, yeah, I bought that and watched that a bunch of times already.
Yeah.
I would say for listeners, if you're listening on May the 4th, go ahead and watch the Kylo Ren outtakes from the Arlnauts. They're the same YouTube people who did the Trump Darth Vader.
Oh, yeah.
They did a real good Kylo Ren video. I'm vlogging that out on the airwaves.
Awesome. Well, let's move from one kind of galactic force to another, and we're moving into the world of advertising and the awfulness that lives in there. Generally, we view advertising of most kinds as not a thing. I think it's a necessary evil, and how they conduct themselves is really what's branding them the not a thing label. New York Senator Schumer pointed out some questions this week and some remarks about advertising, specifically in New York in Times Square, was where he made the remarks about the billboards in Times Square. And those are ubiquitous. You see them enough in movies and TV shows. It's this huge just electronic display of lights and ads and news and everything else. And what he's pointing out is not that that's necessarily a bad thing or an eyesore or anything like that. It's that technology is being shoved into these billboards beyond visually showing you stuff. He's pointing out and hoping the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, looks into MAC address tracking, which is happening with the billboards. And so what's happening is the billboards are turning into they're being kind of quietly, they're adding Wi-Fi access points that are not made to give you Wi-Fi. They're just made to kind of to be there. So when phones are walking around, or people with phones are walking around near those billboards, the phone sees a public Wi-Fi and will probably try to join it just by default. And then what the Wi-Fi point will do is log that MAC address. What they can do beyond that is, if all of those MAC addresses get logged into a database somewhere, they can figure out who is you based on your search history and everything else, and then tie that MAC address to you and do all sorts of crazy tracking. And it does sound a little conspiratorial now that I think about it. But
it doesn't make it wrong.
No, it really doesn't. But in the age of kind of big data and you know, really, really cheap hard drive space, it does sound very plausible. It's plausible enough that Apple had taken action in one of their older iOS updates. And I'm pretty sure Android does this as well, but I've not looked into it. What Apple does with their iOS is when the phone tries to join a Wi-Fi, it randomly generates a MAC address. So it uses a different MAC address with each access point, so it can't be tracked. But the it's not user editable or tweakable or anything like that. So when the phone does actually join the access point for real, when you initiate it, the real MAC address is transmitted. So it does give out that information. I remember having a program on my my Mac ages ago that would rotate the MAC address whenever you wanted, essentially, to avoid that kind of thing. But the phone doesn't let you run that kind of stuff. I'm pretty sure the something like that is available in Android. I don't know if it would be default or not. That's something to look into. If there are any really big Android people that would know about that, you know, please let us know. That would be fun. We don't get a lot of corrections, thankfully. So let's just say it's right and then see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's because we're right.
But I do think what, you know, tracking that information is absolutely something that that businesses would want. I know that when the iBeacon technology came out from Apple, that's the one that does the Bluetooth sensing. If you're nearby of a store or something like that, if let's say you walk into, I don't know, Starbucks, it would ping the Starbucks app to say, hey, you're there. And when you run it, it would pull up your order and everything else. That's one of the promises of the technology anyway. I don't know if those have been executed or if it's just quietly collecting everyone's information, kind of like these billboards potentially are. But the real takeaway is the insidious kind of collection of your data, your movement through the world, your all that kind of stuff, I think is a thing. I don't think it's too far-fetched to say that they wouldn't want that information, and the technology is certainly available for that. I guess what we're trying to avoid is the scene in Minority Report where he is recognized by the ad avatar in the shopping center.
That was the first thing I thought of when I read this article.
Yeah, I mean, it does not seem far-fetched at all. It was already in a movie.
And if it could happen to Tom Cruise, it could happen to any of us.
And how many tech heads saw that movie? I mean, that's why there was so much emphasis on that gestural interface that was in that movie. So many things have come from that. So you know that people have analyzed that movie to death to figure out what they could make out of that for real. And
they just had a scene on the newest Silicon Valley where one of the characters was doing gestural interface and referenced Minority Report.
Yeah, it was popular. People saw it.
Although they also had a scene with a horse having sex with another horse, so I don't know where they got that from. The internet? I don't know where they got that from.
Oh my god, that was fantastic.
I would probably use the hard to watch. Some bold comedy.
Fantastically uncomfortable, especially, and not to tangent too much, but especially from the subject matter. So right immediately after that scene is the revelation about what what the product is of the company and the product, you know, being the stock price and doing whatever you can to keep the stock price up. It was just, that was maybe, I think that was almost on par with the, you know, uncensored horse penetration, for me, from a comfort level.
Yeah, that whole thing made me uncomfortable. It is an interesting show.
Yeah. Silicon Valley, still a thing.
Watch it.
Well, moving away from internets and surveillance, but kind of sticking with surveillance in a different frame, the Marines are testing a combat drone, an autonomous drone, to help with I guess just fighting bad guys. It doesn't really have a specific kind of outcome other than trying to reduce the number reduce the manpower involved in, I guess, operations. Because in using drones to fly around or gather information or anything like that requires an operator for those drones, and there are plenty of stories about the operators of the drones that do surveillance and attacking, and how those are, you know, essentially people in some bunker somewhere just looking at screens, but that's still a person kind of behind it. So the Marines are testing a new autonomous kind of battlefield information collecting thing, which is a combo of it looks like a chop down Segway with a computer on it, and then a gyrocopter of some sort, which will pop up and fly away from it to kind of cover the gaps in the ground based sensor array. And currently, this is only in kind of the base test phase. I don't know if it's even named yet, but it looks less, I think it looks more realistic from a battlefield perspective than the Boston Dynamics kind of robot dogs, but at the same time, probably less
nightmare hounds.
Yes, but probably less. Less hardy in kind of the world, because it is a two-wheeled robot.
It's like a shittier R2-D2.
Well, it only works on, you know, relatively flat and even surfaces, whereas the robot dogs are, despite being that division being sold off by Google, still fairly terrifying. Although, coming back to Silicon Valley, it was really funny to see one of them in the premiere. they even showed it reacting to being kicked and how it did not fall over. So once again, Silicon Valley being a little too realistic for folks. But this drone, I think, has a lot more potential for something that would... it has a lot more potential for actual kind of use. I mean, it seems reasonably cheap. I mean, looking at it, like I said, it does appear to be just kind of a small Segway with a flying copter on it. And I think it would have to be kind of cheap because it would need to be essentially disposable. Because if they're calling in airstrikes with something like this, it's probably going to be in the blast radius. So I think the having the combo of kind of a flying thing and a ground-based thing does make a lot of sense, as long as they don't put weapons on it. I think that's real bad when things like that start happening.
It's still better than Chappie.
You know, I never saw that. Is that
worth it? No.
No?
Just skip it.
Okay. No. All right.
The Matt Damon one was okay.
Elysium. Yeah.
Elysium. Yeah. I would say watch that.
Yeah, but I remember that one being good. Okay. Good to know. Well, we're going to move from a little autonomous surveillance bots to autonomous cars, always a favorite on our show. We're pro autonomous car. We're generally anti autonomous flying things. Really any kind of surveilling or attacking kind of thing is bad, but autonomous transportation, we've generally come down pretty positively on. And a report from Canada came out recently where an expert, and I did not catch in what this person is an expert in, but it was in the headline. An expert warns that self-driving cars is likely to lead to people having more sex in cars. And I think the headline is kind of hilarious and probably inflammatory, which makes it a good headline. But I take issue with A, whatever this person's expertise is in, and B, did you really need an expert at all to tell you that information? I'm pretty sure that was gonna happen.
That person works for the Canadian Automated Vehicle Center of Excellence, whatever the fuck that is.
Okay, first of all, that's not a thing, and then, and second of all, I remember when Tesla's Autopilot came out, there were jokes about how in the Model S and the Model X, and probably in the Model 3 that's upcoming, there's a huge screen on the inside of the cabin, and it can be used for kind of dashboard information, vehicle information, and stuff like that. Or if I'm remembering correctly, it actually has a web browser built into it, and so I'm sure you could pull up, you know, Netflix on it, and then Autopilot and chill will be a thing really soon. But I actually don't think this is necessarily a bad thing. I mean, wouldn't that make people like kind of have less rage on the road rage?
I think the issue with it is that at the point that these autonomous cars are at right now, they still require driver input. There are circumstances where the driver needs to take over.
Right.
And this would distract them from doing that.
Right. The threshold for distracted driving only goes up.
But if we can't have a car that can go without us paying attention, then what's the point?
Yeah. I mean, I think the eventual implementation of it is that the driver does not have to put any input into the car. I think you're right. The implication is that the cars are self-driving, and they're really not. If I'm remembering right, most of the cars require you to actually still hold the wheel, even if it's in kind of an autopilot mode. So they have sensors in the wheel to detect if there's any kind of tension on it or that you're touching the wheel. I would think you at least, like, they'll probably put sensors to tell if you're in the driver's seat or not. But I think it's very likely that all manner of things are going to happen in cars when they can drive themselves.
If it can't drive itself, if it can drive itself and I can't drink in it, what's the point?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question too. Is like, is there a different threshold for driving while drunk if you're in a self-driving car?
Yeah, you can blow like a 0.12.
I think that will be fun law wise as well, regulation wise. I think there's probably a lot that will go into this, and if anything else, it will it'll be a fun time to be on the roads.
We're in the cars,
right? Let's just hope they figure out you know, on the Model 3, the pictures I saw of it, that roof is like awfully big and full of glass and very see-through. So, I mean, maybe that's your thing if you're going to be, you know, using the car, you know, in the auto drive mode and participating with a partner there. But
how long do you think it'll take before we have the first death from an auto-driven autoerotic asphyxiation accident?
When does the Model 3 come out?
The first person definitely is going to be the Tesla.
Well, the Teslas certainly have the leg up on.
Don't carradine in cars, people.
moving from driving artificial intelligence to artificial intelligence for the internet and mobile phones, Baidu, which I had always thought of as the Chinese version of Google, and that is as close to it as a good description. It is a search engine, but they also have tons and tons of other things that they do in addition to that. But one of them is an AI that they've written called Deep Speech, and this isn't like the Google AI that was made to play Go. This one actually seems to have a sort of a purpose. It's specifically to transcribe speech. It's speech to text. And what's interesting is that it's speech to text in Mandarin, and that's kind of cool on a number of levels, because there, you know, speech to text sort of exists in English on iOS and Android and whatever platform you want. And I say sort of because it's still not great. But what's interesting is that in China specifically, it's a lot heavier leaned on, because the Chinese written language is a lot more complex and harder to deal with from a text input standpoint. While there is some character style input that you can do, a lot of it is still kind of word-based pictograms, and that is just you know, impossible, or it's not possible, it's just real hard to to do on a small screen when you have, you know, a thousand or thousands of characters that you potential characters for you to do. So a speech to text engine makes a lot more sense. What's interesting is that it's being rolled out specifically for mobile devices to replace kind of that kind of input. But the story that we found also says that it's made to understand not just Mandarin Chinese, but also kind of any hybridization of the language, of mostly English words being picked up and used in speech, which I think is very interesting, because it's a much more natural language approach than kind of a formal language approach, which I feel is probably more realistic for how it's used, and then also probably more accurate. Although it would be really interesting to know what over time, like what colloquialisms develop. I find that really interesting, because for the first time we'll have more of a record of how people talk, and then how that's conveyed into input. And then, you know, some number of years from now, you can actually get, you could compare like how people talk now versus how people talk, you know, 10 years from now or even 5 years from now. You know, we joke about, you know, people talking like they text, and if that that's, I don't know, that that is also not a thing, but but I think it would be really interesting from a language and linguistics perspective what changes go through the language when it's being used, and especially you know, used in conjunction for mobile phones and just how people communicate. I just find that one fascinating. So it'll be interesting to see if what Baidu does with the algorithms, and I don't know if there's kind of an equivalent in a development for English. There probably is. I just wish that Siri would recognize like a third of the things that actually it's more. I've noticed this is that I would say maybe two thirds of the time, 75% of the time, Siri understands what I say. But interestingly enough, it has a lot of problems with what Julie says.
Siri's racist.
I actually think it's sexist. I think she Siri doesn't listen to women, because I've heard of two other women that have problems using Siri, but it seems like most of the men that I know, you know, it works. And so that's probably because the engineers are probably also mostly men and are therefore testing on themselves and not with actual real people, which includes women.
Women are people too. Which is why there should be more diversity in companies that make that kind of technology.
Yes, exactly. Diversity, it's a thing.
Women engineers are a thing.
Well, we'll move from actually over to a company with a female CEO. There's a company called BioViva, which advertises to help with aging. And the CEO of the company performed underwent the company's main kind of service, which is a gene therapy to combat aging, and I think they're claiming it was a success. It's very interesting to see what they qualify as a success. I guess she didn't die, so that's a success. But the company's premise is that aging is related to the length of, I believe they're called telomeres, which are in chromosomes. Your chromosomes are made of DNA, and when you all the proteins, all the blueprints for how everything in your body is made comes from that DNA. And what some scientists have said is that the over time, there are these regions on chromosomes called telomeres, which when the DNA is used, or you know, used for to create a new cell or create a protein or anything else, it involves the DNA, the double helix, to untwist, and then the blueprint, the genes are looked at by the body, and then something is done with them, and then it retwists. And during that process, the telomeres appear to be or act like a kind of a buffer or a protective kind of covering over the DNA. And then over time, all that twisting and untwisting of the DNA shortens those telomeres. And some scientists believe, including this the woman from this company, is that the telomere length kind of determines your age or your biological age. So over time, those telomeres become shorter. And the CEO of the company was told that she was born with abnormally shorter telomeres, and so is at risk for certain age-related issues earlier in life than normal. So like the reduction of or loss of muscle mass early and other things like that. And so she underwent a process to have her telomeres lengthened. And the way this is done is it's a gene therapy that is administered as a bioengineered virus. So the virus infects you. I don't believe it is actually like a sick kind of virus. So I don't think you get sick like, I forgot his character's name in the Newborn movie. Oh, what was the, was it Legacy? Is it that one? The one with
Jeremy Renner?
Yeah. Yeah, he goes through gene therapy that was administered by a virus, and he gets like the flu for like half an hour in the movie. I think it infects your body in that it spreads to all the cells, but it doesn't necessarily cause like an infectious kind of disease like symptom. But in any case, this the woman took it upon herself to be the first test subject and infected herself with this virus, which then went through and supposedly added 20% or 20 years back to her life by increasing the telomere length, essentially, you know, buttressing up the protective stuff around all of her chromosomes. I find this super fascinating. I think it's a little too early to tell if it's actually a success because there's still all of the other stuff that has to happen to those chromosomes over time and everything else.
Went and did it in Colombia so they could avoid the regulations in the United States. And apparently one of their science advisors quit after she did it, saying there needs to be more clinical trials before they do this. But she did it anyways.
More than just one, right?
But, yeah, this seems like the plot of an interesting movie.
Yeah.
But it is actually real life.
Right. Right. I think it's super interesting to see that she's experimenting on herself anyway. At least it's not,
I kind of support that.
Right, right, right. There's
if you kill yourself, then oops.
But hopefully it doesn't have some, you know, lasting effect on, families of hundreds or whatever. You don't have some secret facility with, like, you know, wards of people that are failed experiments.
You know what this was? This was actually the beginning of Jurassic Park. Like, that's when they set up Jurassic Park in Costa Rica.
It is really, I think it's the science, at least from a, like, from a describe it on a website and see if someone can pick it up. I mean, it fits under what I think of as, like, high school biology, so it seems sound anyway. But I think not only do there need to be more clinical trials to see what potential kind of effects there are kind of long term on the body, I think the science is still not all the way sure about telomeres as being, you know, specifically causing of kind of genetic aging, biological aging. There's a lot that goes on with it, because even if your telomeres are long, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're not at risk of cancer or other things. The article does point out that those correlations are still kind of wide and not locked down enough to know that, okay, if I do this, then everything's going to be great. I think maybe your cells won't fall apart, but all sorts of other stuff could happen to you too. So
it doesn't protect you from buses.
Right. I think it's you're better off spending your money not in a Colombian research facility, but instead on enriching your life, or you know, enriching a podcast, maybe. If you'd like to donate or sponsor the Not a Thing podcast, we'll be happy to talk about
give us hashtag, some gene therapy.
Hashtag gene therapy.
Life finds a way.
It does sound really interesting. I would like to know more about it. I'll definitely be following up on this one as kind of time goes on. I remember the first time I heard of gene therapy is a thing. I think it was in the Metal Gear Solid games. So, you know, it's been around, or the idea has been around for quite a while. That you can, you know, modify genetics in kind of a controllable way that that determines how your body works, hopefully for good rather than for evil. But I also think it opens up a lot about what or a lot of questions about what your, you know, what is specifically genetically determined and what's environmentally determined and what can you affect about your, you know, your body and how everything operates. And it's still, to me, it's still not clear enough to do something, you know, as drastic as this. There's enough conflicting and confusing information about how genes work and how genetics works and plays a role, but isn't necessarily the sole determiner of how stuff works. So that's still a thing, still to be investigated and working on. But then kind of also still a thing is having a whole lot of fun. we're going to move away from heavy gene therapy to flying things, specifically hoverboards. And we mean hoverboards, not those two-wheeled handleless Segways that people try and ride around on, you know, on city streets, and I just want to kick them all over. But hoverboards that actually hover. So a company called Zapata Racing, it's just abbreviated ZR, have made the Flyboard Air and then successfully flew it over, it was either 2 or 3 miles of sustained flight. And what the hoverboard, or rather the Flyboard Air is, it's a platform about this, you know, it looks like it's maybe 2 feet by 2 feet kind of square. And it's got little legs for when it's on the ground, but it's got 4 essentially rocket engines that are fueled by the wearers, the riders' backpack full of kerosene, jet fuel. And you engage it, and it flies into the air, and there's some technology in it for stabilization. But the flying is, and I believe the flying is controlled by a remote control, which angles the jets rather than you leaning. But the test flight of it is fantastic to watch. Actually, their whole channel is fantastic to watch, because I didn't know this until I had done a little more research. But this is the same company that does the Flyboard, which is, they look like, I don't know, they look like, it's essentially just a hose with nozzles that you strap to your feet, and then the nozzles are connected to a pump which draws water and then sprays it out the nozzle, so you're flying or floating, and that's all controlled by your balance and your angle and everything else. And there's some crazy videos of them, you know, doing all sorts of ridiculousness with that. It just looks awesome. But this one's
on jet fuel.
Right, this one runs on jet fuel. So I believe in the interview he called it it's like a camelback of kerosene.
It's the rocketeer for your feet.
Right. it kind of looks like the flying thing that the Green Goblin uses. but yeah, it the video shows I believe it's the company founder. So again, CEOs doing right by their company, trying it themselves rather than having some, you know, disposable minion do it. Do it yourself. I think that's awesome. But he's
DIY CEO.
It's clearly flying through the air. They're doing it over water, and I assume that's because if the rockets fail, at least you're over water and it's not it's not an insurmountable fall onto the ground. But it does look like it's flying at least 10 feet in the air, probably more than that. It seems to be pretty maneuverable. It looks like they flew it around like a harbor for a little bit, and it was being kind of followed on jet skis so you could see it go. I forget how much flight time you get. It didn't seem like very much. It seemed like on the order of, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. But it would be 5 or 10 minutes of really awesome. So these are 100% a thing.
It is real. It's not a hoax.
Yeah.
My favorite part of at least the article that you sent me from The Verge was the subtitle on it. Jet fuel can melt steely skepticism. That wins the day.
Oh, that's real good. That's real good. Yeah, I think if ZR wants to donate two flyboards for us to
we'll test those out
to help test, I'm sure we could, you know, work out a test plan and document them appropriately on the show. It'd be great.
They can go 85 miles an hour.
Oh my gosh. That does seem real fast. Yeah. I'll probably be watching that video again after we shut down for the day. But before I do that, I want to remind everyone we're still plodding along, recording episodes weekly. It's still really, really fun. If you would like to join us on the Not a Thing podcast, please let us know. Tweet at us, Facebook us, go to the website and let the HAL 900 know, and we'll be happy to work out a time with you to be on the air. Or if you would, you know, just like to say how cool we are on Twitter or Facebook, that'd be great too. We love being mentioned. It's fun. It's kind of amazing how many episodes we're at. We're at 185. So we're coming up on 200. We'll have to see if we do anything really fun for that or not. I hope so.
I think we can say that's going
to
be a thing.
Yeah. If you'd like to join us for that or join us for any shows in the meantime, please do so. We love when people join by listening in, but if you would like to join us by actually joining us on the show, it'd be fun. It'd certainly be a thing. So, Brennan, I will talk to you next time.
Till next time, Alan.